front door as people are leaving. We try to have all our elders at the front door. This is a very important time. People are leaving. You get a chance to minister to people. It's not just saying goodbye to them. You're not just shaking their hand and getting them out the door. Many times at the front door, people started weeping or people say, "Would you pray for this?" I immediately pull out a card and write a prayer request down. Someone's got a big prayer request, their heart's burning, and they say, "Oh, you pray about this?" "Yeah, about it, I'm gonna pray about it." 30 seconds, maybe not 30 seconds, that's lucky. 15 seconds later, I don't even remember who told me a prayer request, I don't even remember the prayer request. That's how bad it gets when you get to be my age. It's terrible, terrible. You do not remember. When someone gives you a prayer request, that's important. Write it down right away. And it tells them you're concerned. I write it down right in front of them. Then we get it on the elders' prayer list. Now, we have a prayer list. And here's two key verses, prayer warriors. Here's the different brothers. This is the one we actually use. Start out with praise to God, confession. I see this from Daniel 9. The leaders confessing the sins of the group and dealing with sins in our church. Lots of them, by the way. Talking about the spiritual vitality, protection, unity of our church. Then elders' personal prayer requests. Here's each of our elders right here. A very precious thing, and I'll tell you how we do this. Share your personal prayer requests. You get to know each other this way. We need to know. And you know, most of those prayer requests revolve around children, work, wife, family things, the pressures. Share your personal prayer requests. Some elders, they don't ever want to give prayer requests. Yeah, you have a prayer request? No prayer request. Nothing to pray for? Gosh. You got 5 hours? Do personal prayer requests. Pray for one another. You're a team. To weld that team together, you've got to be praying for one another. Then special flock needs. Here's just some categories. Special missionary needs, special evangelistic needs, and unsaved friends, our camp, etc. Of course, you're praying for this camp all the time, I'm sure. Yes, right here. Yes, I do. Now, what we have found, again, every group's different. I understand that. Rather than have two or three men give a prayer or two that most of you conk out on, we have found as we're sitting around a table, we pray conversationally. So it's moving all the time. You might pray 8, 9, 10 times. And while we're praying, someone will say, "Let's remember this one." So we're giving prayer requests out, we're praying, and it's moving, it's alive. If you allow one man to pray the whole time, most of you by our prayer, our elders means in the evening, these men have had a long day. Most of them have been up since, you know, early in the morning, full day of work. They're sitting there, conk out they go. This way, you're involved. You're listening, and it's moving very quickly. So I find that conversational prayer, use a prayer list, and while you're praying, shoot things in. Let's remember, or someone says we're praying for someone who's real sick, someone else says, "Yes, but this, pray about this, about it." And so we'll carry on a prayer request for 4 or 5 other prayers, same prayer request, just different aspects of it. So I like the conversational type of prayer in an elders' meeting, lots of involvement, lots of throwing in prayer requests as we're going along. Make it alive, make it vital. It's a very exciting, invigorating, spiritually stimulating time. You know, many elders' meetings, not yours particularly, but many elders' meetings, they start with the perfunctory prayer and that's it. But we're to give ourselves to prayer. The idea is prayer is our work. Prayer isn't the thing that starts the meeting and ends the meeting. Prayer is our work. And don't be afraid to share your own needs in that. So here's just an idea. Have some kind of prayer list. Have something that's there for the shepherds to keep you up, to keep building your prayers, and not forgetting key issues. Now, in my own personal life, I cannot operate without a prayer list. I just cannot. Information, Hudson Taylor says, the key to praying. And we have information coming in from our missionaries. If I don't write it down, I will forget. And I don't want to forget. I'm a priest. Did you know that, Dan? I have a whole ministry. It's called the Ministry of Intercession. It's been given to me by my great high priest. That's a serious ministry of intercession. And I need my prayer list to help me, or I run out of prayer requests real quick. All right, now number three. Number two was prayer. Number one was commitment. Number two is prayer. How are we looking on time, Dan? I love this guy. You know, if he shaved the center of his head out, he'd look a lot like me and got glasses. Okay. All right, number three, organization of the elders' meetings. I just want to make sure we got time for our canoe trip today. Organization of the elders' meetings. If your men are like our men, and I'm sure they are, they're busy. They're overcommitted. Most elders are involved, maybe in the board, the camp. Most elders are usually busy men, and they're usually high committed men. They don't want to come to a meeting and waste time. They don't want to spend a night or an early morning and waste time. And yet, I actually have visited a number of elders' meetings of other churches, and it's pretty pathetic what I've seen in some meetings. They just sit there, yak for a while, and everyone comes in late, straddles in. It's a waste of time. You've got high-powered guys, they don't want to do that. They're working for companies, they don't let them do that. So you come into this elders' meeting, and there's just a lot of wasting time, and talking, and actually maybe just get one thing done. I've seen it. Or allow one person just to go on and on and on about something that has no relevance to the meeting. Someone want to come in, show the picture of their new children and all that. That's fine. There's a whole fellowship side, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. But the meetings need to accomplish something, and you need to feel fulfillment. So when you leave, you feel, boy, we've got something done. You do that repeatedly, and you'll lose good men. You know what? Most men in most churches that are really your prime men in ministry, they want to minister. They don't want to sit in meetings. They want to be teaching. They want to be talking to people. They want to be involved in ministry. So if the elders' meeting is simply come and let's chat and it doesn't get anything done, they don't need that. They can just minister and have a lot more fun. The meetings need to be effective. Now, to have an effective meeting, particularly now, again, the size of the eldership makes a difference. When we had three elders, it's a different ballgame than now we've got 10 or 12 men sitting there. It's a different ballgame. You get 10 or 12 men, and they're all big talkers, and all of our elders, for some reason, have a problem with talking too much. They always inject with a phonograph needle or something. I was talking to a guy, and he says in his elders' meeting, he's the only one that talks. The rest don't say a word. He says, I can't get them to talk. They sit there and they go like that, and that's it. I said, we have the opposite problem. Every one of them has a sermon. They've all got sermons, and they're ready to give it. Don't press the wrong button. So we have to have some control in the meeting, or we literally will not get anything done. They're all good men. So we have found that as the eldership grows, you have to have a moderator, someone to control the meeting, someone to give guidance to it, and someone that you have empowered to say, we've got to move on. Someone that we've said, you've got the right to tell us to run this meeting right. Now, years ago, we used to share the moderatorship. Each elder would take 6 months. We found that was okay, but as the group grew, some men just could not control a larger group of men. And I know elderships that are in 20, the number of 20. In fact, John MacArthur, out at their church, I think he said that they've got something like 75 men on the eldership. Well, the bigger the eldership gets, the more control, the more order you have to get, or you'll get nothing done. The moderator is a person that you've empowered in the eldership who gives leadership to it, who prepares, who has an agenda, so you're ready, you're moving, and who you say has the right to say, we've spent enough time on this, and someone to call you into account. Now this brings us to preparation for the elders' meeting under organization. The elders' meeting is so important. It is so important. When you get that vision how important it is, then you prepare for it. That means someone has to prepare an agenda. Now, if you're real small, you may not need an agenda. I realize that. If you're 15, 20 people, that might be just ridiculous to you. You can come and sit down. And our church was very small at one time, and the elders could do things much more casually. But as the church got larger, more programs, more issues, more people, you couldn't do that. You operate differently. So the size will make a difference. And if I'm not relevant to you, just try to pick out of this what's relevant to your meeting. An agenda is important, and we have men, they have to call their agenda into the office if they want something on for that night. They call it in, and then they usually put their name by it. Herb Banks or Doyle Roth, that's his item. And I have an agenda here with me to show you. That will move the meeting along and allow you to accomplish something. Oh, here it is. Here's the agenda. We have in our agenda, first of all, the names of all the men, and then we have four items we always deal with right away. Right away. Just get them out of the way. They're always the same. First of all, we start with our prayer time, Shepherd's Prayer Guide. Always start with our prayer. and we do our best. Start right at 6. As soon as the second man's there, get started praying. Don't wait around and chat. Two men are there, you got time to pray. Start praying. As the men come in, they come right into prayer, and they know you're serious. This sends a little message to their brains. Don't come late. You're going to miss prayer. It's going to look bad. Now, again, sometimes they're caught in traffic or their work doesn't allow them to. That's understandable. But it shouldn't be because you're just wandering in and you could have been on time. So we're starting with prayer. At least first half hour in prayer. Then the reading of the minutes of last week. Now, as you get many items on an agenda, many items you're talking about, and because most of you look like you're in my category, that you're starting to forget more than you remember, you read the minutes to remind you of what you talked about last week. I don't know if you're like this, but we can make a big decision, talk it through, 2 weeks later, forget. What did we say? What was our opinion on that? Get the minutes out. You forget. You forget what you said and what you decided. And I cannot tell you, I've lost count of the number of times we've had to run back to our minutes to decide what we decided on. And people said, what did you agree on that? Just give me a moment to remember. If you're deciding on important things, you need to write down what you've done. And then we read the minutes and remind ourselves, and then let me tell you what the minutes will include. It'll include, you are, James, you last week were appointed to make 3 phone calls. So the minutes are read, and you thought, did you make those 3 phone calls? No, I didn't. All right, when can you get on that? When can you get that done? One of those phone calls is very important. Can you have it done the next day or two? Report out next week. So as you read through the minutes, you're calling yourself to account. I believe one of the most important things of the eldership is you're calling yourself to account. And you're permitting one another to rebuke one another. Don't have an eldership where you can't talk to one another. You should, as brothers say, admonish one another. Now, brother, that's been 2 weeks. Do you know, I know this assembly. A lady called an elder. Her daughter was highly suicidal. She called an elder and said, we've got to have help. My daughter wants to kill herself. We got her here in the room in this. Left a message with the elder's wife, and 2 weeks later, he got back to her. Of course, they handled the problem. Said, what kind of responsibility is that? This follow-through thing is a big problem. People take jobs, they don't follow through. And you send a message to the church. Don't bother calling them. They're too busy. That's the message you sent. People know it real quick. If you're the kind of person, that person gives you a job and you follow right up, they'll have confidence. So the reading of the minutes is very important, and then we sometimes change the minutes. We say, that's not what I said. I did not say that. The minutes need to reflect what was said in the meeting. Then we appoint an elder for announcements each Sunday. We have a special time. It's our elder's time, a week talk to the congregation. And in the meeting, we appoint that. And then pastoral groups report. Our whole church is broken up into pastoral groups. And every week, the men who are in charge of that give us a report. Who's here? Who's not here? So we get an immediate pastoral report on each of the groups. Then we go to our items in the agenda and start knocking them down. Sometimes, like last week, we were very, very, very busy. We immediately spent a minute to prioritize. What items should we deal with tonight? And the others they can just go with if we'll go to another week. See that you're organized. Our God's an organized God. The sun comes up every time. Can you imagine Jesus Christ being disorganized? Can you imagine Jesus Christ missing a meeting because he forgot? Can you imagine Jesus Christ showing up late? Can you imagine Jesus Christ not having a sermon ready? No. Perfect in all his ways. In all his ways. A disorganization, procrastination is of the devil. It's not of the Lord. And I personally think we need to get tough with ourselves about that kind of behavior. And I get tough with myself and still work with myself. I don't like it when I procrastinate and I don't like it when I don't follow through. It makes me very angry at myself, and I believe the Holy Spirit can help me do a much better job. A much better job. Terrible thing not to return a phone call to a desperate saint. It's a terrible thing not to follow through when you were told or there's a great need and you just forget. That can be corrected. You can work with that. That's a fault in yourself that can be dealt with. It may take years. Keep working at it. But don't excuse it. Please don't excuse it. The agenda should reflect the nature of the eldership. You're not building contractors, you're people contractors. You're working with people. I hope your agenda reflects that. Now again, I understand in a very small assembly you may have to be dealing with the building and all that. But let me tell you a secret we found years ago. Set up a building committee. Set up a group of people. It can have men and women on that committee. You don't even have to be saved to be on that committee. To take care of putting in nails in the wall or painting the porch or something like that. Get that off your back and the deacon's back. If you don't do that, somehow the building has a way of just taking over all your time. And you all know that. You could sit in the elders' meeting and spend the whole time talking about putting a new roof on. Others can do that. You don't have to meet the biblical qualifications and be examined to get a roof on a building. Get a group in the church. Get a committee, decorating committee, building committee. Appoint them to do that. They'll come to the elders if they have some big expenditure or how it fits in the program. That's fine. But don't spend, and I've seen it. I've seen it with my own eyes. Sitting in the elders' meeting, half the meeting was dealt with building items. Get a committee to do that. Take $100. We've done this, so I'm telling you what we've done. Take $100 a month out of your budget. Get a brother in the meeting and tell him we're going to give you $100 a month. Your job is to oversee this building, and we don't want you to even do it. We just want you to get the different brothers and sisters to vacuum or clean or paint or whatever it is. You are to delegate jobs. You're to once a week walk through this building, see anything that's broken, write on the log, and you call someone and get it fixed. We give a guy $200 a month. Give him $200 a month. He's got to walk through the building once a week. That's his job. And then whatever's broken, he writes in the log, and he has to call people. We got a lot of people willing to help. They just don't want the responsibility. That's all you got to do. You call Brother Don Jones and say, Don, this whole wall over here needs painting. It's just really dirty. Most people respond immediately. They just don't want to be stuck with the ultimate responsibility. Spend $100, give someone that job, and you'll save yourself hours of elders' work that you don't need to be at. So you can be talking about people, praying about people, and if you're done with your agenda, go out and visit that night. In fact, if our elders had a choice between having going through our agenda or go out and visit, they'll go out and visit. That's fun. And that way you'll get out to people's homes. Use that night or whenever it is you meet. All right. Follow up, follow through. This is so important, brothers. This is where we fall down. Oh, it just drives people crazy. We're to see someone. Someone hasn't been there for weeks. Someone is sick, and we're not getting to them. We know it, but we're not following through. Use the elders' meetings. Rebuke one another. Lovingly, of course. You just say, now, brother, we can't do that. That makes us all look bad, makes the church look bad. When can we get that done? So-and-so's in the hospital. Who's going to go? When are you going to go? Right there in the meeting. Make your meetings work for you. Make them dynamic. Make them accomplish something. Always put a date on something. If you say to someone, I'm going to visit Sister So-and-so who hasn't been out in a month. When are you going to visit her? Can you do it this week? Don't just say, I'll visit them, because it may never get done. If next week you don't bring that issue up, then men know they're not going to be held accountable. Now, we have a name tag system in our church. When you come in, you get a name tag, just like these. And it's been printed out. Someone has a name tag, and they rip it off the thing. So at the end of the day, we actually have a little attendance sheet. It's really neat how it works. It runs out on the computer. So once a month, the elders get an attendance of who's been there, who's been not. And we go through the attendance, and then we hand out phone calls to each elder at least once a month, so people don't go by a month. And then each of us hand out phone calls. You maybe get 3-4 phone calls each, and you will have to call that person. And then as we're going through the list, we'll say, you know, Brother So-so has been here all the time, but why don't you call him? He's a Sunday school teacher and has been really faithful. Just call him and say thanks. We really appreciate it. I want to let you know that. So as we're going through the list, we'll just pick out, highlight some names of people we just want to call and say thank you to. Now, next week, I'm going to answer to those phone calls. If I don't answer for those phone calls, no one knows if they're done, and I'll probably forget. I'm very busy, just like you are, and you might think, well, he's a perfect shepherd. I am no perfect shepherd. I forget phone calls. I forget to do my duties. I don't want to do some of my duties at times. I just simply don't want to do it, but I know they need to be done. So I know Tuesday I'm going to face my fellow elders, and they're going to say, tell us about your phone call. That helps me in my own irresponsibility, in my own laziness, my own procrastination. That's the accountability. That's where the eldership's working for you. This follow-up thing is, I hear it all the time. I hear it all the time. People doing jobs, they don't follow through, and it just frustrates everybody. Okay, number 4, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to stop there. No matter what Kevin says, we're going to go on this afternoon. I want to deal with the whole thing of group dynamics, group learning. because I think you can only take so much in at a time, and I think some of you are ready for a canoe trip. Or the walk, John's going to walk us through the woods, and will people come back alive? Okay.
I want to do the geology walk and the evidence creation and be in here in, say, 10 minutes.
Now, Alex continues with his ministry. He's introducing a book about Robert Chapman.
And it's The Life of Love, and it's an incredible story. We make everyone in our church working with people read this book, and we tell them these are the attitudes that we expect in the church. It is one of the most delightful, spiritually inspiring stories you've ever read. Guaranteed, or you have to pay double, either one. We just came out with his full biography. This is a wonderful life, an unusual man. He lived to be 99 years of age. The story is told, you know, when he left his legal practice, a high court lawyer. Brilliant, brilliant man, was fluent in 5 or 6 languages. And he went to a little Baptist church in the south of England, and they had gone through 4 pastors in 18 months, Ebenezer Baptist Church, fighting church. And how he turned that church around with his love and his consistency and the incredible stories of how they always would take the lower place, twice they lost their building, and how God blessed them. This was actually, many of you don't know this, the spiritual mentor to George Mueller. He was one of the dearest friends to George Mueller. And I believe the story you've heard of how they had no food at the Mueller orphanages and someone came, this is the man who came with the money, and time again. This man has been an inspiration to me. Here's his full biography out, just so touching. Now, I know this is a little bit confusing to people, particularly if you don't read. This is the study guide. This is the mentor's guide. This has the answers. You can't buy this book. In this book, I basically, I found out he's not a millionaire, so we're okay. In this book, we put all the answers in it, and I also, in this book, talk to the mentoring elder, tell him things that I think he should say to the mentoree. So this is what you buy for the men as they go through it. Those of you who are leading, you get this book. Or you can buy a bunch of these and have this out while you're doing it. Now, I was with the brothers the other night with John and Pat. And who else is here from the assembly? Yes, Larry. Matt. And they keep the mentor's guide out there, but I pushed it aside so I wouldn't let them use it. But they all use the study guide. This is the answer guide. When most men, they read a book like Biblical Eldership, it is so packed with heavy Bible exposition, like dumping a truckload of sand on them, it just overwhelms them. This allows them to take the Biblical Eldership book and piece by piece just go through it, verse by verse, with practical suggestions of how to implement this. So it's a way of breaking a big book down into bite-sized portions. And we've been using this for a number of years, and I can tell you the men in our church, we've just been having more fun just spending time with these men, breakfast and lunch, and the men have responded to us that this has been one of the keys in their life. And I'm going to be talking about the whole thing of sanctification in the eldership, how we actually sharpen and develop one another. Now, let's finish our lecture from last night, and I'd like to get into some really practical things to make your eldership a functioning, working eldership. Theory is great, but it's got to work. It's got to do something in the church. Some people have the theory of eldership, but they don't have the practice, effective eldership. That's where we want to move to. I told you the key concept is shepherd and overseer. Those are the two great words that define for us the New Testament definition of eldership. It is a pastoral eldership. It's a shepherd eldership. Spiritual oversight. That's the key concept. Our two great verses. Then we're looking at the 4 major aspects of shepherding. There is the protecting ministry, protecting the church. There is the feeding ministry, and we must feed the flock. And there's more verses. I just gave you some of the key ones. Let's look, and I want to move quickly on this. I won't take as much time because I want to get to some very practical material today and this afternoon. Let's talk about leading and caring, leading the flock or managing the flock. Notice again, I want you not to miss this. Everything we do by the Word. Not in our own steam we do this. You can't lead God's flock without the Holy Spirit, and you have nothing to tell the flock without the Word of God. So it's all done by the Word. Leading the flock, managing the flock. Let's turn our Bibles to, let's go back to 1 Timothy. We'll look at a few passages. 1 Timothy chapter 5. First Timothy has much to say about elders. Incidentally, let me give you a good argument here against unitary leadership. This church was in serious trouble. It had elders. Paul personally was involved with these elders, worked with these elders. 6 years later, the church is in the death grip of false teachers. This would be the perfect place for Paul to get rid of elders and appoint one man. Let's just appoint one man to take over the church. He didn't do that. He wants Timothy to get those elders back up and functioning again and wants the church to respond properly to the elders. Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor. Now that word rule, I think rule is just too, it's the word, Greek word prohistemi. Rule is just a little too strong. It's not wrong. I like the NIV here. It says those who take the lead or those who, anyone have the NIV here? Yes, what does that say, Lee? Yeah, I'm sorry. Those who direct the affairs, that's good. That's good. Any other translations here? Anyone here with the New World Translation? Kingdom, Jehovah's Witness Translation? You never know. You don't know what's going on in these camps today, you know? Especially with a guy like Kevin and Matt, I mean, you don't know. What? Guards at the door? Okay. All right. What are you reading there, brother? God's Word. Can't fight that. Okay. The word prohistome has the idea of standing out in front, leading. So it's a word. It's an interesting word because students of this word say that it has the idea of leading, managing, but it also always has the nuance of caring. It seems to have this double nuance. And some passages, the caring aspect is more emphasized, some the leading aspect. So it has this sort of dual meaning. Those who are taking the affairs, those who are managing, those who are leading. Notice, the elders who rule well. All elders are involved in leadership, in ruling, managing the flock. That is the eldership's job. But some do it better. You see, some men have a real ability to motivate other people. Some elders have a real ability to follow through. Very important, the concept of following through with things. You know, you can sit in the elders' meeting, we'll talk about this in a moment, come up with grandiose ideas and plans, and no one follows through. Now, let's turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 12. But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you. Incidentally, that term, diligently labor among you, is the same Greek word, kapiao, as in 1 Timothy 5:17. Those who labor among you in word and doctrine. Here's the same word. They diligently labor among you. Now notice this word, and have charge over you in the Lord. That's the same word in 1 Timothy 5:17. Prohistemi. They stand out in front of you. Those leading you. Those managing the affairs of the church. And give you instruction. That's admonition. So here it is again, and I think these were a prototype elders here in Thessalonica. They had not yet actually been officially appointed. This church is only, as he's writing this, maximum 3 months old. And so there are already men that have been raised up in the congregation who are working hard at what? They're working hard at two things, taking the lead, providing leadership, and admonition, instruction, that's sort of more of a negative, corrective type of concept. So, these are the very kind of men that when Paul would come back through the church or send Timothy back, he would then officially appoint them, as we find in Acts 14:23 or Titus 1:5. So here's the other side of the story. Here's the men emerging out of the church, showing himself responsible for the body, leading the body, instructing the body. Those are the very men that would be appointed as elders. Paul says, you esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. It's a very hard work, a lot of responsibility. Let's just turn right now to Philippians 1:1. Paul and Timothy, bondservants of Christ Jesus, to all the saints in Christ Jesus who are in Philippi, including the overseers and deacons. Another term for elder in the New Testament is overseer, and Paul can use both synonymously, interchangeably. Overseer has the idea of one who watches over. Again, the concept of managing, leading. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. Look at verse 2. We looked at this last night. Shepherd the flock of God among you. Here's this word overseeing, but here's the verbal form. Exercising oversight. Look at verse 3. Not yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples. How can you lord it over people if you're not in a position of authority? So Peter says this, I want you elders, he's talking to the elders, the plurality of elders, I want you very urgently to shepherd, pastor the flock of God, and then going to the verbal form, using it almost interchangeably, exercising oversight. So that's why I like the term pastoral oversight. You bring both terms together, shepherd, taking oversight, bring them together. Exercising oversight. Now, when you exercise oversight, there can be problems. There's wrong motives, right? One is you might do it for money. In many cultures, that's a very big problem. May not be here, but I've talked to missionaries, say in our country, hardly anyone can handle the money because it gets stolen all the time, or people start using this office for money. So don't do it for money. Do it freely. Don't let someone press you into it, Peter says. You've got to do it because the Lord wants you to do it. That's God's way. Don't do it because your wife says, I want you to be an elder, or because the other elders say, won't you please, please, we've got to have you or the church is going to fall down. No, you have to do this willingly. And then the third thing he says is this, don't do it domineeringly. One of the abuses of this particular office is the abuse of authority. People get authority, it goes to their head, and they start controlling people, hurting people. It's a very, very, very big problem. It's probably a bigger problem than serving for money or serving for other reasons. It's because people want to control others or they have a domineering personality. He says, don't lord it over those allotted to your charge, but be examples to the flock, true servant, humble servant leaders. Now, I bring out all these passages to show you that the eldership is a leading body. It's a managing body. You are leading the flock. You have charge over the flock. Now, as I've talked to different churches and different people, one of the biggest criticisms I hear is this. The elders aren't leading. That's one of the biggest criticisms I hear. They're just not taking leadership. Somehow the assembly just keeps floundering. We keep going, repeating the same problems year after year. They're just not giving us any vision. They're not handling situations. Men, you need to be aware of this. This is what people are saying about you. This is what they're saying about me. This is what they're saying as a criticism of many elderships. The eldership meets, it does some basic things, get the speaker, get the Lord's Supper out, make sure the building's painted, a couple things, and that's it. But somehow we're not going anywhere. Somehow situations are not being handled. Things are not being addressed properly. So you need to pray about this. All elders are managers. Whether you feel you're a manager or not, the eldership itself, the body, the council, is a managing, governing, leading institution. You are to lead that body. Now, in shepherding, we're all coming back to the shepherding concept. We know in the Old Testament, and there's so many beautiful examples in the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, what did the shepherd do? Well, the shepherd would open the fold and lead the sheep, right? They would lead the sheep out to pasture. They would see that the sheep had water. Now, Have any of you read Philip Keller's, any of his books? Have any of you read those? Great books. They are terrific. Some of them I've read two or three times over again. He was a shepherd, and you'll learn so much about shepherding, because remember, this is the biblical image. The more you can understand this imagery, the more you'll understand what's in the minds of the biblical writers. Now, we're not shepherds. Now, I had a wonderful opportunity opened up to me, and at the last minute it fell through. But I was actually given the opportunity to go with the Navajo Indians on a what they call it? They don't call it a sheep drive. What do they call it? Sheep drive? Okay, sheep drive. I'm not a shepherd, so I don't know. And it fell through. I want to do this someday to get the experience of being with sheep, because I don't know a thing about sheep. I was raised in Newark, New Jersey. Pray for me. Wasn't my fault. I had a lot of bad luck in life. So I don't know anything about agriculture or sheep or anything like that, but I would love to have that experience to sort of get into my mind and my spirit that work. So we've got to do a little extra work. And in my own personal ministry, I have done an exhaustive study of everything I could find in the Old Testament on sheep and shepherding to sort of integrate this into my thinking. One of the things a shepherd has to do, or shepherds have to do, they have to manage land. They've got to manage that land. You've got to manage water. You've got to manage disease. You can lose a flock very easily. Now, in a very arid place, now, one of the things I saw when I came to Tennessee here, the lawns. I can't believe the size of your lawns. And the first thing I said to John is, and it shows you I'm a businessman at heart, man, be in the lawn business. This is the business to be in. Now, in Denver, you know how big my lawn is? It's about from here to this wall, about 20 feet wide. That's it. And I just bought, our lawnmower broken, so I just bought a little electric one. Just go over with the electric. It takes me about 10 minutes. And Dan said, you put me out of business. We have to have sprinklers or we don't have lawns. See, it's so very dry there. Most people don't want lawns. In fact, our whole front lawn, which is big, is all rock. Rock and trees. We just rock it in. It's just too much trouble. It's too dry. You waste a lot of water. And it's a pain in the neck. But here, the lawns, I can't believe it. And the grass, you have so much grass. Israel's an arid place, more like Denver. And in an arid place, you've got to be moving those sheep. And when that hot summer comes, your sheep will die. There'll be nothing. You've got to move them to higher ground, right? You've got to get them to places, and you've got to build folds there, and you've got to take care of them. Because, you know, the predators also know they're going, and they're going to be following. You've got to manage. A shepherd is a manager. You have to manage a flock. You have a flock, maybe 50 people or 100 people. You have to manage the flock. You need to have that in your mind, what it means. You need to make sure that there isn't destructive fighting going on among the sheep. And if there is, you've got to stop it. You've got to get to it. Don't let it fester and go on and on. That doesn't do anything. You have to face problems. Shepherding work is managing. It's leading. It's addressing issues. People need to know the church is going someplace. The church has a future. If you had young men in your assembly and they're interested in the assembly, if you elders don't send a real clear message, there's a place for you here. Guess what's going to happen to them? Bye-bye. They're going to find, if they're really interested in the Lord's work, they're going to wind up in some parachurch organization. That's what happens to many of them, because there's no message sent to them, there's a place for you here. You will be developed. You will be moved on. And so the parachurch organizations, they're out there with big claws looking for talented young men and women. They're looking for them. They'll suck them right out of your assembly. The young men and young women of your assembly have to know there's a place for them here. There's a place to go. And it's not going to be you wait 30 years and maybe if you're really lucky, we all die at the same time, you could be an elder here. They will not stay. Especially if they're talented and if they want to do things for the Lord. So you older ones, you've got to open the doors. When I came to Littleton Bible Chapel 28 years ago, it was a very unusual church. I've been to many assemblies in New Jersey, lived 3 years in Chicago. So I had a little bit of a picture of the situation. When I came to our assembly in Littleton, the thing that shocked me, it just shocked me, is that the older men, who were then probably men in their late 40s, early 50s, now they're all in their early 80s and mid-70s, is that there was an open door. There was a, you just knew there's a place for you here. And they immediately started moving us forward, you know, within a short, not within a week or two, but within a short time, they were sending messages to us. We're glad you're here. We've got ministry for you here. And that was exciting to young men, full of energy, and young men have a lot of energy, a lot of vision. That's why they need some older men to sort of keep it in control, too, because you get a little crazy about this. But they've got that energy in life, and they're not tired yet. You know, you get up around 50, you get a little tired. I heard a real neat interview with Charlie Rose and Bill Gates. You know Bill Gates of Microsoft Word? And they had this big executive from IBM giving his evaluation of Bill Gates, and he says, he's this, and he says, he's not tired. He's not tired. He's got a lot of energy, a lot of power. He's on a go. As you get older, you get tired. You like to stay home at night. That's, you know, I'll tell you when you know when you're getting older. I'm going to tell you this. This is a good secret. When a good night's sleep is the thing you look forward to. You know you are getting old. My children never, I have two girls in their 20s, they never say, oh, Dad, I'd like a good night's sleep. I've never heard them say that. You know, I've got to tell them, you ought to get some rest. They want to go. They want to be out. So my favorite place is I have this one of these recliner chairs. That's my favorite place. Put the recliner back and sit and read. I'm old. I'm over the hill. I'm gone. So you've got to have some energy. You've got to have people with vision going forward. You've got to open the doors for them. What a wonderful thing to work together. One of the great privileges in my life is working with Herb Banks. He's now 76. He started the assembly in his home. We work together every week. He's at the elders' meetings. At least once a week we visit together. So we've had almost a 30-year relationship. But Herb, his whole life has been opening the doors for younger men. And he's not a platform man. He's not a speaker. But he's a manager, and he's a good eye for sheep. And he's always moving those young guys ahead. He's the kind of guy that on Sunday morning will call me later and say, did you notice that this person has not been there in the last couple of weeks? That's a shepherd's eye. Real eye for the sheep. Leadership. You have to provide leadership. You have to provide moving forwardness. You have to deal with issues. You've got to be managing as part of the work of the eldership. This is an area that people feel we fall down on. So let us be careful. It's not enough just to open the doors and see that people are there and that the temperature is right and the furnace is working. That's something you can hand over to just about anybody in the church. But the spiritual dynamics of the church, the life of the church. And you know, it's not just growing in numbers, it's making sure the church is live, that there is prayer and that we're excited about the word. It's so easy to go through the motions. It's so easy to play church. Just go through it week after week and say, we're faithful. Yes, we must be faithful, but we also have a great mission given to us. People who are Christians have an exciting life. And reaching forward and making sure we've got a world vision and we're interested in missionaries and we're interested in the gospel going out. The Christian life is an exciting life. And you know, I've talked to men. I've not been to England, but I've talked to brothers in England. And they have told me that one of the greatest problems in the assemblies in England is that you've got these older men at the top, 70s and 80s, are at the top of the leadership, and they're not letting anyone through. And so they're just dying right out. They don't even have a Sunday school. They don't have a youth program. Gentlemen, I don't know what age you're at, but if you're at the top and you're trying to hold on, what you're doing is just cementing the assembly for a nice casket, and it'll be done. You've got to let those men up through the ranks. They're not going to do everything exactly like you want. Things will be different. And there's going to come a day when I'm going to step aside and the next generation is going to come through. They're not going to do everything the way I do. But I can't hold on to the thing to the end. Those men that try to hold on to the end, they wind up killing the thing in the end. The best thing is to train and prepare them. And that way, at least you have your theological distinctions, which is the important thing. If they want to have a little guitar or something like that, we get all hung up on those things, and the church dies over guitar. I've seen it. I've seen churches die over guitars. Which is completely irrelevant, I'm thinking, as far as the Lord's concerned. What is irrelevant is that they have good Bible teaching and theology, and they're faithful to the Word. And the Word gives us a lot of liberty and a lot of flexibility to be what we need to be. So be careful of that. It is a problem. Leadership, management of the group. We are shepherds.
And shepherds must manage. Shepherds must lead. Shepherds must meet issues. Let us do that. Now the fourth one, caring, practical caring. Two verses show us this. I'm not even going to look them up. You probably know that. Well, let's look up one because we didn't look it up. For, James. We didn't look at this one. James. James chapter 5. Verse 14. Kevin, did you say there's a canoe trip this afternoon? Boy, that sounds exciting to me. Do these have holes in them, these canoes? I mean, they do float.
Very small.
Okay. I just hate that when they get you out and you sink right away. Actually, I was at a camp that was that way. About every 20 minutes, you'd have to empty the canoe out. Start sinking right away. All right, James 5. We have the protecting ministry. We have the teaching, feeding ministry. We have the leading, managing ministry. This is the care side, the many practical things. Now, good elders will delegate a lot of this out, but some of this still is your duty. And here is a perfect example of the practical care side. James 5, 14 and 15. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him. In other words, assumes you're men of prayer, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer offered in faith will restore the one who is sick, and the Lord will raise him up. If he has committed any sins, they will be forgiven him. In other words, when you're there, you do a little spiritual counseling too. You ask the person, do you think there is anything here that is of the Lord's hand and discipline? Is there anything in your life as you look back? And you can be asked very gracefully. But you should ask that when you're dealing with a very sick person. I ask that of myself when I'm sick. And when I went through this voice situation, which was very, very serious, I joke about it, but it was extremely serious. It's fun not talking for a day or two, but after month, it does crazy things in your head. And I couldn't even talk to my children. It actually literally altered my personality in many ways. I mean, I used to be much worse than this, Dan. It did some real big, heavy things to me and to my family. And I had to look at my life. I sat down with one of my fellow elders, who we get together almost every week for personal accountability, and I went through anything I could think of, any sins, any bad motives, any things I had not done, sins of omission. I tried to confess all those. I tried to look into my heart if there was anything the Lord was trying to say to me. So when you're dealing with people who are sick, very gracefully it can be said, this may be the Lord's hand of chastening, which of course we know that from the Bible, the Old Testament. It may not be the Lord's hand of chastening. It may be the Lord's gracious hand teaching us to draw upon His grace. We don't know all the mysterious ways of the Lord, but these things need to be brought up. And so when someone is sick, and this is not just a guy's got a cold who's been sneezing too much, this is a person that cannot even show up at the assembly. This is a person facing something that is not responding to medicine, and they call for the elders, and they seek spiritual counsel, but they seek healing from the Lord. Doctors aren't able to help them right now, and so the elders come, and it's literally a church prayer meeting right there at the bedside of someone. Very precious. What we do is, when we normally do this, I think I put it in the study manual, we'll bring some hymn books with us, we sing some hymns, each of the elders will share scripture. We'll have a little time of spiritual counseling, and then we all kneel and pray for the sick party. And this has been very many precious moments with dear saints. We've seen some, the Lord is restored. We've seen some die. That's in the Lord's hands. But it is a wonderful time, and it really encourages the saints. Now, you need to teach the saints to do this. They're to call you. If they don't know about this, they are to call you to come to their bedside.
This message is continued on the other side.